Well, hey there, everyone, and welcome to Game Store Profits. This is a special KublaCon episode. My name's Luke Navarro, and with me today, my KublaCon roommate, Alan Herring. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So here we are. We are literally crowded over a microphone in our hotel room. It's the second night of KublaCon. KublaCon is, they say it is the West Coast's largest board gaming show convention. I don't actually know if that's true or not, but there's a lot of people here. And it is a four-day show. We're going to be here for three of those 4 days. And like I said, we're halfway through. We're 2 days in right now. So we've been playing games pretty much for about 36 hours. Pretty close to straight for me. I got in at like 3 o'clock, 3:30, something like that last night. Though I will admit I did not wake up early this morning. So I thought what we'd do is just kind of go along. And before we get into the games, let's just talk about the convention in general. This is my second. And, you know, last year when I was here, I definitely kind of felt a little bit, I don't know if overwhelmed is the right word, but it was all very new to me. This year, I think I'm here with a little bit more of a critical eye. And one of the first things I know you and I, we both kind of felt like when we ran into it, was the game library. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed in it. What about you?
Yeah, I was as well. I was expecting a lot more out of it. Last year I came in and it looked so much bigger. I want to say I'm new to the hobby back then, but I didn't have a lot of opportunity to play new things.
Right.
And so I looked at it and I was like, look at all these games.
I mean, it's a big wall of games.
It is.
And that's impressive when you see all those boxes and that. But then, you know, Alan is also a part of, and actually the founder of our gaming group in Monterey area gamers. And so we've played a lot of games together. And last year when we met here, we actually met coincidentally. Mm-hmm. We saw each other, recognized each other, and started playing some games. This year, though, as we looked at the board wall, yeah, there's a ton of games there, but very few that we've not played, but there's a ton of games we've not played, but all of the games that we've not played are games that I've never heard of.
They have Sorry Sliders in Balderdash.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's kind of like almost like the garage sale collection of board games. And I don't know, but you know, you hear about Gen Con, you hear about those kind of things. And for me, it's all about the not just the new stuff, but the hard to get to stuff. So right now, as we're talking, the game that comes to mind is Marvel Dice Masters. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying that they should have had enough Marvel Dice Masters for all 10,000 of us here to play, but I haven't seen a single copy.
There was one directly across from us when we were digging through Merchants of Venus.
Okay, so it does exist, but not officially.
No,
there was. It's certainly not in the game library.
I didn't see it in the store.
It's not in any of the major stores that are here. There's not a demo. There's not some dude who brought his copy who just setting up a place and said, "Hey, come check out the game." And so there's a lot of things that were here that we were hoping to see and that weren't here. And that's really unfortunate. The other thing that we kind of both ran into first experience is the stores. Mm-hmm. Like any convention, there is a dealer room, a dealer mm-hmm. floor, a dealer. I mean, I'd say a good half of the space, in the main hall at least, is dealer stuff. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of stuff. No doubt about it. But this gets, we've talked on the show a lot about, and I know you deal with it personally, the question of buying at a dealer or buying online. And we always try to say, you know, we do try at least to buy from our local store because that's the guy we know. He's the guy who puts up all the space for us. But the economic reality is cool stuff, Amazon, they're just way, way cheaper.
Correct.
I think here, stuff is going for, I mean, MSRP plus.
I think so.
There's a one guy who's the scratch and dent.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, everything is very high priced. Have you bought anything, Alan?
No, I have not.
Do you think you're gonna?
No, I'm not.
I don't think so either. Though I'll have to say, we seem to be in the minority. Though all of our friends haven't bought anything.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's bought anything.
But boy, this seems like there's a lot of people there buying stuff. Maybe they're just looking.
For all we know, though, some of them are from areas that don't have a game shop. You know, game shops are kind of a dying breed.
Yeah.
Maybe this is their chance to put their hand on it.
Yeah, and they don't want to buy the game until they can physically see it, maybe.
Perhaps. Maybe. I don't know.
So those are the things that kind of we found a little bit disappointing.
Flea market.
The flea market. Okay, I didn't experience this. I was, I was playing a role-playing game that there was a scheduling thing, and the hours that the game was going to play were not appropriately written down, and I got there and I found out I was going to be there for a lot longer than I was expecting to be, so I didn't get to go to the flea market. I'm going to say you did get to go.
I'll say I looked at it and I ran away screaming.
So tell us about, first off, the flea market, you can come here, you can pay to get a space. Mm-hmm. And sell your stuff. And we talked to one guy who was selling, mm-hmm. and he was serious.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just like, you know, you selling your stuff or me selling my mm-hmm. stuff. But the problem was...
Well, I thought we had a game that just kind of got finished right at the time. We were 5 minutes before it opened up. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'd mosey on down there.
Sure.
See what it's like. You know, I thought maybe you can get some rare stuff that nobody else is interested in.
You can get a deal.
Exactly. You know? Maybe then I'd jump on something. However, as soon as I saw how far back the line was. And so I kind of looked at it and I was like, well, all right, well, I'll just kind of sit around here at the entrance and just kind of wait for this line to peter out and kind of work its way around. So they finally opened it up about 5-10 minutes late.
And it's a conference. These things happen.
So they open it up. And they got the Gestapo, I think, out there preparing these guys. They had the megaphone. They're like, gentlemen, no pushing or shoving, you know, no mm-hmm. cutting. They're serious about this stuff.
So, but there's enough people in this line that they could have like a full-on Walmart after Thanksgiving sale.
Most
effect.
Definitely. Yeah. Obviously, the listener that's not familiar with the place and can't see it on a map. Right. They're not going to realize how far this line wound out.
How many people do you think it was?
Oh, I'm horrible at it.
1,000 plus?
Probably so.
Yeah.
I don't know how big the convention is, but literally it went all the way down one hall over to where the miniatures are, which was a huge whole hall full of rooms and everything by themselves, mm-hmm. back towards the entrance, up out towards the hotel. It was a line. So they finally opened up the doors. I look in there, and it was the size of the play area, the open play area.
Okay, so that's about a football field.
I wouldn't even say that.
No?
No. I'd say it's about the width of a football field and maybe...
50 yards?
Maybe.
Yeah, 50 yards.
50 okay. yards. It's really not that huge, but I looked in there. Pretty much it was two rows of stalls.
Okay.
So that's how wide it was. And so maybe an eighth of the line got in the line stopped.
Wow. And so then they started single filing it in.
Couple people would come out, a couple people came in. I finally went back about an hour and a half after it opened, and the line was still all the way back to the miniature gaming area. So maybe half the line got through about an hour and a half later.
Yeah, and this is at 11 o'clock at night that it opened. So at that point, maybe you're not even savvy enough to be making decent deals. Yeah. So again, we've been sounding kind of negative, so now let's get to the good stuff. Hopefully some positive stuff. Let's get to some of the games that we played. Okay. We came in and we got here a little tiny bit early, got everything registered, and realized that for the first few hours there kind of wasn't a whole lot going on. Finally, the game library mm-hmm. did open. We picked up Merchants of Venus and sat down, got that thing set up. Boy, howdy, is that a thing to set up. Went through the rule book, which had to be like, 20 pages?
I think so.
And started playing relatively correctly.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a few snafus, but we were both playing, at the very least, by the same rule set, even if it wasn't the entirely accurate rule set. I'll tell you what, I kind of enjoyed it.
I did too. I really did.
If you don't know, Merchant of Venus, a pickup and delivery game set in some space universe, where you basically pick up goods from one civilization, take them to another civilization, and sell them, and hopefully make some money in the process. You can also pick up passengers, which turned out to work in my favor quite well. I think it would be a really great game with four players.
I think so. I really don't think it'd add too much time to it, because most of it's set up. Once you got the flow thing, it'd go pretty quick.
It did go pretty... There's a lot of rounds. There's 30 rounds. But with just two of us, some of it maybe got a little bit oversimplified.
Perhaps.
Because we pretty much could get to any resource we wanted to. We weren't really running into each other too much, blocking each other out of markets and things like that. But still a very fun game. We played a silly little game from Cheap-Ass Games called Unexploded Cow.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically a card game where you are playing cows and blowing them up via a dice roll to score the cows. Certain cows have special effects. Certain events happen, and there are certain cities in the game where if you do things correctly, you get to collect the city, and they give you a little bit of bonus. A time waster.
Yeah, it's definitely the epitome of a take-that type game.
Yeah.
I find that I don't really care for take that game with just two people, because you only take
this
that
game,
to them.
It said it played with two people, and it technically did.
Yeah.
Sometimes these are lies, folks. Sometimes because it says two people on the box, it really isn't. This needed a third person. Otherwise, you're just pounding on each other. And at the end, you're both worn out and tired, and somebody wins. All right, from that point, I went on and played an epic role-playing game called Honor and Intrigue. We were pirates. Well, privateers. It's different.
It is.
We went and discovered a mysterious island. We got to fight a kraken. We got to fight a mermaid. I was a big, old, burly, Eastern European-type wrestler who played the bosun on the ship. And, you know, it's one of those things I don't get to do very often. I mean, how often do you have 8 hours to sit down and play a role-playing game?
No,
like,
kids.
Never. Yeah. And so getting to do that on a trip like this, it was one of the special things about coming to a convention. What did you do last night?
I got to play Battlestar Galactica. It's
a game I know you've played.
No, I have not.
No.
That
really?
Was the whole reason I wanted to play it.
Okay. So you folks need to understand one thing. Battlestar Galactica is like a hero game at our gaming group. It's, you could almost play Battlestar every week if you wanted to.
One of them actually just painted her miniatures and everything. That's exactly what I wanted to play it for, was because it was such a cornerstone of our gaming group. I've heard it on all the other podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's just something you hear about a lot.
Tell me you weren't a Cylon on your first play.
I was not a Cylon.
Oh, that's good.
But that's the reason I was kind of hesitant to play it. I don't like a lot of that deduction, traitor type games. I'm just not good at them. I don't lie well, and I'm just horrible at deducing who's a Cylon. It was an all right game. They kept telling me it was the worst game they ever played, and that was because the Cylon got executed or killed or whatever the term was for, and right off like round two or three, and so she was immediately
discovered, arrested.
And so it just kind of changed the whole outcome. We knew exactly who it was. So
essentially then you were just playing against, it was became almost a, just a co-op game.
Co-op, yeah. One versus many.
Right. So I then crawled back to our hotel room at an obscene hour, fell asleep, and then did not manage to get myself back into gaming until basically lunchtime. What did you do this morning?
This morning I stumbled down and just happened to go, as soon as I got into the open gaming room, there was a flag, which for those that don't know, that's how they do it here, that if somebody's got a new game that they're playing or a game that they're playing and want, are willing to have additional players, they put a flag up just to symbolize, hey, we got seats open. Very first flag I came up to, Caverna.
Jackpot.
Jackpot. So I was really excited about that. You're probably better explaining games than I am, so do you want to explain?
Yeah, we've talked about Caverna a lot on this show, but basically it's Agricola 2. You're playing Dwarven miners, who are building a civilization underground, essentially. And you do the things you need to do to build a civilization. You raise animals, you raise plants, you go to war at times, you develop an economy, you make money by mining, you're basically, it's a Euro game, right?
Correct.
You're putting down buildings, you're using those buildings to gather resources, those resources you're turning into victory points.
Exactly. For those that's played Agricola, you can pretty much sit down and learn the changes in iconology, and you'd be able to fit right in. Some of the differences, though, is that first, it's easier to make food.
Right. So everybody kind of says that's the biggest. You don't have to worry about feeding.
However, that being said, same thing with Gricky. Maybe I'm just horrible at these games, but I fought for food the whole game, except for the last two or three turns.
In a way, does it make it, it just kind of goes out of your mind and you don't even worry? You worry too little about it, so to speak?
No, and it could have been just that it's the first time playing. Agricola is one that you, both of Agricola, all those type of worker placements, the primary thing is about efficiency. Doing the things in the most efficient manner.
In the proper order.
The proper order. And I think some of it was still, even though I've played Agricola quite a few times, I think I still didn't grasp the nuances of this one yet, and so I wasn't being as efficient as I needed to.
Okay.
The other three people I played with did not seem to have as much problem with food as I did. But then again, I was the first one and quickly got an extra worker. That's one of the key things in Agricola is you want those extra workers.
Right.
Where this one, they did not worry about that as much, and so you didn't need to feed them. Some of the other differences is there's a chance for all intents and purposes, after round five or six, for the most point, you're feeding your people every turn.
Right.
So that's a difference. There's some extended rules of when you don't, but for the most part, you're feeding
them. And so every other turn, right?
No, it's every turn except of the seven rounds left, three of them, you flip over a tile. If it's a question mark, then something doesn't happen.
Okay.
But in other words, you feed them.
Okay.
So it's variable, so it does change it.
All right.
The other thing that's different about it is almost every action you select almost has two things. Every action, you're right. So whether it's a tile, card, whatever. You put it down, and maybe it's you can plant a field, and you can sow on it. Another one is you can gather wood, but you also gather food. And so each time you do something, it feels like you're being a little bit more active.
Right.
The final big thing that I really saw that's different from Agricola is now you can quest.
Right.
And from questing is more or less you build weapons. All it really does allows you to, if your weapon's at five, anything from five up you can get. You can select. So maybe a quest is three.
Okay.
So if it's a quest three, then that means you get three rewards from five or, if your weapon's five, from five or less. So maybe you can get you a sheep, you can get you a wood, and you can get you a coal.
Okay.
Now, as your weapon level goes up, those three levels come out, you get more. It's kind of like a Chuck E. Cheese, those little tickets you get.
The more
tickets you get, the better stuff you get. Well, same thing. If your weapon level's all the way up to 13, now maybe you can actually take equivalent of actions like build an additional room or get a cattle, which is worth a lot more or something like that. So...
All right, so now I know Caverna's. It's one of those games that's on my list that I really would like to play. I know it's been on yours. You've played it. Mm-hmm. How would you feel like in terms of where would it fit for you? Is this a game that at some point you could see yourself buying? A game that you're just glad you played once and don't need to play it again? A game that you'd play every time it came to the table?
I won't buy it because I'm cheap. However,
and it's not.
Still, $90 here is what it's selling for. However, if I could somehow free get my hands on it, it would definitely Jones Theory Agricola out. It definitely streamlines Agricola, makes it more interesting, but gives you the same feel. If whatever you liked about Agricola, you'll probably like this one that much more.
Right. It's Agricola 2.0.
Exactly.
Right. I spent most of my day today playing a game called Pirates with a more like Pirates. It has an exclamation point. And it's a Warhammer-sized game. We played a huge game with 20 different people, each controlling a ship. So 20 different ships. So you can imagine Warhammer Fantasy Minis. Probably each ship could probably hold maybe 10 on the deck. So you can imagine how big these ships were, and therefore how big the map had to be. It was crazy, chaotic, wildness, fun. You know, I think there was a sea monster involved at one point. You're swinging, you're boarding, you're blasting. You know, the dwarves have got an airship that's flying over, dropping things. An awful lot of fun. And again, one of those experiences that I'm not going to have that experience at home. I mean, who's going to set up a table that the size of a queen size bed? And then who's got the massive amount of money that it must have cost. Just imagine, you know how expensive Warhammer stuff is. And some of these boats were fully a foot long and nice resin boats. They must have been just insane.
Well, don't forget the cost of the minis then.
And the minis that, you know, then you've got maybe 20 minis on each boat times 20. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at 400 minis. You can't do that at home. No. And so that's, you know, one of those experiences I got to do. What's the, anything else that you played today? Maybe stuff that, I know you played a bunch of stuff, but maybe stuff that enjoyed or were new to you?
There was two that I wanted to, that I was able to get a hold of that I wanted to, because either they were out of print or was hard to get a hold of. The first one that we got to play was Cash and Guns.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Just a little bit. I know, you know, I'm YouTube familiar with it, so to speak.
Right. I think it's got its claim to fame by having the toy guns, the styrofoam guns. So roughly what happens, you got a deck of cards, 8 cards. You got one bang, bang, bang card, 2 bang cards, and the 3s are click, click, click cards. So nothing happens. So each round, you put out some money, 5 of them face up, and then on the count of 3, you all point your gun at somebody. Then you count to 3 again, and whoever wants to drop out can drop out, hide under the table.
Literally.
I guess it depends on how realistic you want to get.
All right.
So the reason you might want to cower out is if 2 or 3 people are pointing guns at you.
Okay. Because that increases your chance,
Of being shot. Exactly. The problem is if you hide under the table, you're a coward, you get a coward token, and you lose $5,000. It's not really, that's grand scheme of things. We're getting between 70,000 and 100,000 at the end of the game. So 5,000 wasn't
all right.
But you get quite a few of those. One, you're not making money because it's only 8 rounds and you're cowering out all the time. But then, but the key thing is then try and find out who's lying. Because when you play your bang card, that bang card is out for the rest of the game. You only got 8 cards.
All right.
So of the 8 cards, only 3 of them are actually loaded bullets.
Okay.
So that's when you're trying to figure out when to bluff, when not to. I was kind of skeptical of it because I thought it sounded very simple. And it is. But it is that chaotic fun that you're pointing guns at each other. The only way to make this game better, for what it is to get real Nerf guns.
Yeah, I was going to say cap guns.
Cap guns. And when you actually turn it over, if you actually had a loaded weapon to shoot it, that's the only way to make it more fun than what it was. We ended up playing it, and we ended up playing it 2 or 3 times. And this evening, we had some extra time. We went to go from the library, and this was from the library, so give kudos to the library. We went and tried to find it again.
Right.
We really enjoyed it for what it was.
So it sounds like this is definitely the kind of game that you would just keep in the top of a game bag and just take it with you whenever you had 15 minutes to burn. Awesome.
Other thing I will say about it real quick is that because it's cash and guns, your robbers point guns at each other. I kind of wondered about the theme, you know, would my mom and dad like it? And now playing it is all tongue-in-cheek. It is fun.
Right.
No one would be offended by it. I would have no problem with my kids playing it. It really is just fun stuff.
So. Awesome. What was the second game that you'd...
The other one that I'd heard a lot, and again, the library wasn't that good, so we were just kind of was grabbing things.
Right.
If I heard anything about it, one of them was Ave Caesar.
Right.
Ave Caesar is a charioteer racing game from the Roman Colosseum, and it is, like I said, a racing game. What you have is you have a deck of cards, and I don't remember...
One through six.
Many. One through six, but it didn't say how many.
I don't know. The key is that there was about... All of your cards in total added up to about the distance you had to travel.
Exactly. And so what you do is you have pick three cards, and you got to pick what you wanted out of there. So if you wanted, if you had a 6-3 and one, you could play your 6-3 or one.
Mm-hmm.
Once you play that, you draw another card, play pass on. But where it gets really interesting is in there is there's bottlenecks there around the corner.
You can't pass through a space when somebody's occupied.
Exactly. So you really had to go in there. So you might have a 6 and a 3, but you might be three spaces away from a bottleneck. And so it may be better to play that 3 now so you bottleneck and stop everybody else from playing. Because if they can't play, they completely skip their turn. And so once you do that, then you play your 6 the next time, then you zoom away. Mm-hmm. And you just now went the equivalent of 9 spaces.
Right. I played this game along with you, and I've often in the past tried to explain the difference between games that I like and games that I really like. And Caverna would be a game that I like. Ave Caesar is the kind of game that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a little bit of randomness and some very tight mechanics that everybody can grok real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And you're vying over, you know, I mean, you and I yelled at each other one or two times because we blocked each other out.
Yeah. What are you doing?
You get into that block spot and you know, okay, you've got it. I will say that there was one slight, I think it was an error in the game. There were two, the board was double-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And one was labeled basically the simple board.
Mm-hmm.
And one was the more complex board.
Okay.
I think the simple board was a little bit harder than the complex board. The simple board starts right out with a really nasty series of bottlenecks, and we got jammed up hard on that second board.
I don't know if it was a simple board. I didn't see that, so I'll take
All right, maybe I just kind of...
It appeared simple because it was more ovular.
Okay.
Where the other one went around, looped around, had some loop-de-loops, and was more graphically pleasing. But I think the difference was that second game, because these games play really fast, and the concept of it, it actually...
10 minutes? 15 minutes?
Probably, yeah. The game's actually set up that you get points for winning a match, and you're supposed to play multiple matches.
Right.
So if you came in first place, you get 6 points. Kind of anybody from known to NASCAR and all that, they get the concept.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the second game, we all knew how to play better.
That may be.
And so because we knew that, we were able to take more advantage of that.
Yeah. And this is a game where you're not going to be nice.
No.
You are really all fighting over the exact same spots.
You are.
On the board, you know, there's not branching paths. There's not, you've maybe got two ways to get through a given area. But I thought that was a lot of fun. We're going to play some more games tomorrow, I am sure. We'll be here for basically another day. But before we go, we did want to kind of bring up some of the things that make conventions different and special. And one of the things that kind of strikes me is how all of these people, and there's a lot of people, I feel like there's more people here this year than last year, but there's a lot of people here, they can get together and play games. And, you know, you may not know these people at all, they're maybe completely different than you, but we're connected over these games. Sometimes it goes great.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe a little less than great. Maybe you end up playing with the guy who, you know, he maybe makes one pun too many, or 10 puns too many. But you're still able to sit down and have this conversation. And to me, that is an echo of the church.
Right.
You know, and we can come together. You know, we don't really have a whole lot of church events these days. Where a lot of church comes together, but But in theory, at least, we should be able to get together with our brothers and sisters, regardless of our specific denominations, mm-hmm. our specific theological distinctives, even our language, our color, our place in the world, and be able to share in our relationship with God through Christ. And, you know, sometimes you get the opportunity to do that maybe when you do a mission trip. Sometimes we do have things. We maybe have a large event or maybe a Christian concert. Mm-hmm. Maybe a speaker who comes to your part of the country. And you can get together and have that shared experience. And I kind of do wish, I mean, don't get me wrong, I would absolutely be horrified at a let's get a bunch of Christians together and have a conference just for the sake of doing that convention. Mm-hmm. But it would be kind of, I wish we had that kind of interdenominational fellowship that we'd have at a place like this.
Correct.
And, you know, I think we need to sometimes remember, both as gamers and as the church, to try to bring some of that back home with us, so to speak. And to, you know, take that openness and connectedness we feel with each other here, and remember to try to do that in our places at home as well, both in our churches, but also just, you know, maybe at our game stores. I think that I've had a good time. You got...
Well, I think one of the interesting things is, and maybe this says something about my spiritual life, I get to this convention and I'm excited about being here. And like you said, you go in there and you got these like-minded people that want to play games. And so it breaks down your barriers of nervousness. You know, when I'm out at work or whatever, I'm always nervous about what I say. You know, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to get in trouble with the laws mm-hmm. nowadays with how it is about talking about religion and the thing. You get here and you just talk. And it becomes fun. It becomes natural. What would life be like that if you had that exact same excitement and that lack of fear about talking about your Christian life? How adept would you be in your witness then? And I think that's one thing that I'm going to get out of this conference, kind of with what you're saying, is, you know, maybe I need to have a little bit more enthusiasm, a little bit more excitement when I go out there and talk with people.
Well, and I think the word that you were using was comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that comfort here in ways that we really maybe don't. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't tell very many people, just like, hey, I'm Luke. What do you do for fun? Oh, I'm a gamer. <It's>, what? That's a weird conversation to have.
But you still do the same thing. Hey, I'm Luke. I'm a Christian.
Yeah. It's a very similar thing, but here is a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
And so because this is in a safe place, we feel more comfortable just kind of being ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so I hope that we take some of that back home with us. And remember, as churches especially, the church is supposed to be
mm-hmm.
our safe place. But, you know, I'll tell you what has happened a couple times to me on this trip. For the vast majority of this place are convention goers.
Mm-hmm.
But there are those few unlucky schlubs that just happen to book a hotel on here this week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you run into them in the hallways, or you run into them in the elevator, and they're kind of looking around like, oh my goodness, who are all these people? And so you kind of say, hey, you know, you just talk to them, you maybe tell them a little bit about what you're doing, try not to sound too strange. And you know, I don't have any problem doing that here, because of course, because you're surrounded by mm-hmm. this, you know, great cloud of witnesses. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, you know, as a church, we encourage each other by being there and allowing each other to live out our faith. And in doing so, when we run into those people in our lives, and of course, in our real life, the numbers are flip-flopped. Mm-hmm. They're completely different. But when we run into those people, because we have that community of our church,
mm-hmm.
that fellowship, that connectedness that reminds us that we're in the right place and we're doing the right thing, we can have that comfort sharing with the people around us, the people who we just happen to run into, we work with, we live next door to, you find in an elevator, you never know.
So where are you going to have Christian Khan 2015
at? Yeah. Well, if we're doing that, we're doing it in the South. Because we're not crazy. All right, folks. Speaking of not being crazy, we're going to bed. Get up in the morning to play some video games. As always, thank you guys for being with us. Alan, thanks for hanging out with me this week and being on the show.
It's been fun.
And folks, as always, we remind you that no matter where you are, even at a gaming convention, that God is the game master, no matter how the dice fall. The game plays on.